Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
DACA will continue. In a 5-4 decision, the Supreme Court rejected a Trump administration effort to end deferred action for childhood arrivals. The program was established by executive order by President Obama in 2012 after Congress repeatedly failed to pass comprehensive immigration reform or the DREAM Act. It grants temporary legal status to people who were brought to the U.S. illegally as children before June 2007. One of those children is Elias Rosenfeld. He joins us now from Waltham. He's now a senior at Brandeis University and an advocate for the program. Elias, welcome to Radio Boston.
Hi, thank you so much for having me today.
Elias, how did you feel when you first heard the news today?
It was a very big sigh of relief. It's been 3 years that DACA recipients across the country have not known what their future holds. So I think today is a temporary victory, but still a very big victory. And just being, you know, patting ourselves on the back for the victory that we did today, but aware that tomorrow and for the foreseeable future, there's still a big fight ahead.
Back in 2018, Elias, you told the Brandeis newspaper that you check Google alerts every morning back then, not knowing if there was going to be a news story that would say you couldn't be here anymore. Have you still been checking the Google alerts? Were you looking for this morning, or did it kind of come up on you?
Yeah, I mean, I personally wasn't able to sleep last night just thinking about what the Supreme Court would rule this morning in case it was going to be a negative outcome and preparing for the worst. But in terms of the fear and anxiety, it hasn't really changed until today. I still wake up every morning and search immigration or DACA on Google or Twitter just to see if anything changed from the night before. So that process of anxiety has been there since the program was revoked, and especially over the summer when there were immigration raids and announcements of that sort. But today feels like a bit of relief, and you can breathe a little bit better knowing that there is some temporary sense of normalcy there.
Elias, life has demanded resilience of you. You moved to the U.S. from Venezuela at 6 years old. Can you tell us a little bit about your story?
Yeah, so I came here from Caracas, Venezuela at a time there was increasing violence and anti-Semitism. And I came here with my mother and my sister, and we moved to Miami, Florida. And we came under an L-1 visa, which is a managerial visa. Unfortunately, when I was 12 years old, my mother passed away from kidney cancer. And as a result, there is no legal mechanism in place in the legal immigration system for when a parent like my mother passes away. But I didn't know of my status until the summer of eighth grade when I went to apply for a learner's permit and didn't even have the social security number required to get that identification, just the mere ability to drive. And since discovering my status, I sort of got very involved in the movement in Miami. And in 2012, when there was immigration reform happening in the Senate and in the fight for DACA, and what DACA allowed was pretty much the ability for me to work, to drive, to apply for internships and scholarships like the one that I am at Brandeis, where I'm on a full ride scholarship under the Meyer Craft program. All those things that I was able to accomplish were a direct result of the privileges that DACA gave me.
I'm sorry that you lost your mom. If you were able to talk to her today, what would you tell her about what you learned today?
Well, I hope today was a small testament to sort of the bigger fight. She is the original dreamer always in my eyes. She came here to protect my sister and I, so I see my advocacy as an extension of that, and I see today's ruling as optimism for the fight that is ahead and ensuring that DACA recipients like myself have permanent protections, that DACA dreamers that weren't able to apply for DACA because the program were revoked are now able to apply, and ensuring that we protect undocumented siblings and parents like my mom.
In our last minute or so, you just referred to the fight that lies ahead. And in fact, legal battles, you know, probably aren't over. This decision only ruled that the Trump administration failed to give adequate justification for ending DACA, not on the fundamental legality. Are you expecting further court fights and uncertainty?
Yeah, I think that there is still the biggest question is that Congress needs to act finally on the issue and ensure permanent protections for DACA recipients and the undocumented community as a whole. If you look at the most recent polling, over 60%, I believe 66% of Trump supporters themselves support solutions for DACA recipients in Congress. So as a whole, it's one of the most bipartisan issues that you can see in Congress in general. So I think this is a good opportunity to mobilize Congress and make sure our House members and our senators finally pass what the American constituency has demanded, which is permanent protection for Dreamers and TPS holders and undocumented community as a whole.
And that's Elias Rosenfeld. He's a senior at Brandeis, an advocate for DACA, and a Dreamer himself. Thanks for being with us today, Elias. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
So for more on today's Supreme Court DACA decision, we want to turn to two experts. We have Shannon Dooling, who reports on immigration for WBUR. Shannon, welcome back. Shannon, do we have you?
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Can you hear me?
There we go. Okay.
Now I can. Glad to have you, Shannon. And we also have Nancy Gertner. Yep, WBUR's legal analyst. Judge Gertner is a retired federal judge and senior lecturer at Harvard Law School. Judge Gertner, welcome back to you.
Always good to be here.
And we welcome your reactions on this decision. Were you waiting for it? Are you surprised? Are you relieved? Or are you girding yourself for the next battle? We want to hear from you. You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK, or tweet us at Radio Boston. So Shannon, I'm going to start with you. I know you heard our interview with Elias just now. What was your reaction?
Yeah, I mean, Elias, his story is very similar to a lot of the Dreamers that I've spoken to over the years and a lot of people that I spoke to today, which is that this decision from the Supreme Court comes after 3 years really of intense legal battles at the lower level. And it does provide a sense of sort of relief, a sigh of relief, a temporary relief for this anxiety they've been living with over the last 3 years. But pretty much everyone I've spoken to today also agrees with Elias that there's more that needs to be done. It's not a permanent fix. And, you know, they may feel safe with their, you know, safe from deportation for now with their DACA status. But as you mentioned, Tiziana, the Supreme Court did leave this open for further action. You know, they didn't comment on the legality of the program itself. So that definitely leaves some room for further challenges. So there's excitement, but also I think a little bit of trepidation.
So before we go to Judge Gertner to talk more about the ruling, I do want to ask you to give us a little more local context. Remind us about how this program affects young people here in the Commonwealth. How many young people are here? What are the benefits of the program for those young people?
Sure. So, you know, there's close to 6,000 active DACA recipients in Massachusetts. But by most statistics, almost 20,000 people are eligible for DACA in Massachusetts. A lot of them are fearful of signing up for the program. It requires a lot of trust in the government, which is not something that under the Trump administration, immigrants have felt very much of for our federal government. And so 5,600 active DACA recipients right now in Massachusetts. And, you know, these are folks who, for some of them, have had this status for 8 years now. You know, as you mentioned, it was established in 2012. So in that time, many of them have, you know, they've gotten driver's licenses, they have work permits, they get a Social Security card, they can open bank accounts and attend college at in-state tuition rates. So it really makes a huge impact in an individual's life, in a family's life, and in the Commonwealth's economy.
So Judge Gertner, let's turn to you. You spent the day reading this 74-page ruling. Chief Justice Roberts wrote it. What's your initial reaction to the ruling?
Well, I think it was, it's a technical decision by the chief, really kicking the can down the road is what it does. It doesn't, no one denies that the Trump administration actually has the power to end DACA. And it essentially says that they just went about it the wrong way. This is not unusual for this administration. The numbers of executive orders that have been signed with little or no process and sometimes with little or no thought has led to litigation in which courts have, if you look at the travel ban, what did it take, 3 travel bans for finally the court to say, okay, this time you got it right? I think that that's what we're seeing here. The legitimacy of what the Trump administration did, the power to do it, rather, is uncontested. They just did it seat of the pants the wrong way. They were basing it on their assumption that Obama's DACA program was illegal, and there was no basis for that assumption, and then there were no other findings about the impact that eliminating DACA would have on the 800,000 or so people who've relied on it. So it's a process.
Judge Gertner,
it's a technical decision.
So before I turn back to Shannon for a minute, are you saying then, did the court signal that the Trump administration does have the ability to eliminate the program? Did they signal that in this ruling, or is that just an open question?
No, they more than signaled it. They say that the issue is not the legitimacy of the program. It's not the power of the administration to implement it. It's that they, when you change policies under, when an executive changes policy, it has to comply with a law known as the Administrative Procedure Act, which requires that it give reasons, that it can't give arbitrary reasons, that the ruling can't be, as they say, arbitrary and capricious. So it's not, you know, you don't have the power to do it ever. You just did it the wrong way in this case, which is why I say this is kicking the can down the road.
So Shannon, there you go. I mean, that's a wide open door. Are you talking to advocates today who are saying, you know, we hear what Judge Gertner's saying and we are ready for more legal battles?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think that the main point that advocates are trying to make right now is that while, yes, this is a time to celebrate, let's breathe a sigh of collective relief for those that are safe at this point from deportation. But also, you know, there's a fight ahead of them. And the fight needs to be brought to Congress in their estimation in order to get any sort of permanent protection for DACA recipients. I spoke with Ava Malona. She's the CEO of the Massachusetts Immigrant and Refugee Advocacy Coalition, or MIRA. And again, she said that, you know, it's a victory, but the fight isn't over. Let's hear from her.
It's a huge victory, and it's important to celebrate, but also it's important to stress that Dreamers are still vulnerable. The Trump administration could still try again using a different rationale, and that's why it's extremely important that Congress needs to act and needs to act now.
I mean, look, President Obama in 2012 used his own executive authorities to create the DACA program exactly because legislation had failed and stalled in Congress. So it's going to take a lot more advocacy on the congressional level to get any sort of permanent remedy to this. And, you know, I don't think anyone would be surprised to see the Trump administration come at this again from a different angle.
Let's pick up a call here, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. How are you reflecting on the Supreme Court's decision about DACA today? We've got Bill on the line from Newton. Bill, go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon. 3 quick points. Number one, a lot of great grandparents, great, 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 and so on, were allowed, after being born elsewhere in the world, come in and not get grilled from here to there, and they became American citizens upon arrival, as did my great-great-grandparents come. Secondly, and I think we're expressing too much pressure on these people. Number two, and a lot of them came from questionable families, as did most people in the world. Number two, most of us understand, even those who don't agree, that this is a political move for the next election. And it's fairly obvious, and the timing and the nature of the fact that it really wasn't delivered wholeheartedly. And third,
So, Bill, actually, I apologize. I'm going to stop you on those two because I want to be able to work with both of those points. I'm afraid I might not have time to work with a third. So I'm going to thank you for your call. I'm going to pick up on both of those points. Thank you. So, Judge Gertner, let me start with Bill's first point. Remind us a little more of the legal history of when it was legal or illegal to immigrate or emigrate to the United States.
Well, I mean, all of the parents that are the parents involved in this case are people who had come to this country, presumably initially, could have been initially legally and then became illegal, fell out of status, as they say. And then these are the children who were born of those parents who have been in this country, there were requirements for DACA that required that you had to be in this country for a certain amount of time, that there had to be no felony convictions. There were sort of fairly specific requirements for the children of those parents. And as I said, some 800,000 qualified. There are people who are outside that group, but 800,000 qualified. And to his point, my grandparents, too, were on Ellis Island, all sides of the family. So we all benefited from this programs like this that enabled us to be citizens. We're all in the same situation. As to his second point about it being political, that's an interesting question. He was suggesting that Roberts joins the, quote, liberal judges here to kick the can down the road so as to not make this an issue in the next election. I don't know whether it has much to do with electoral politics and Roberts' concern that the Supreme Court be a legitimate institution and rule on both sides, pro-government, pro-administration and against the administration. The devil will come in the next couple of cases, which are the cases directly confronting presidential power, the cases involving the subpoena of Trump's financial records. Those are particularly volatile. And if the court rules that they have... Yeah, go on.
So I just want to point out, so Texas Senator Marsha Blackburn was one of the Republicans to tweet about her disappointment today. And she picked up Justice Clarence Thomas's argument. She said, quote, as Justice Thomas said, today's decision must be recognized for what it is, an effort to avoid a politically controversial but legally correct decision. And she went on to say, President Trump restored law and order when he ended Obama's illegal program giving 700,000 plus aliens amnesty. So there are Supreme Court justices arguing this was illegal from the beginning and ought to be pushed back.
I want to jump in there for one second, and
Shannon,
Judge Gertner, if you can allow me and correct me if I'm speaking out of turn here, but you know this was never about amnesty for these undocumented individuals.
Right.
There's no pathway to citizenship, and that's a huge misnomer, and that's a huge falsehood that the Trump administration has propagated in their effort to delegitimize DACA recipients. But this has never been about providing any DACA recipients, not even do they get citizenship. They don't even get a pathway to citizenship. This is a perpetually temporary status that they have to renew every 2 years. They go through background checks. So to say that it's amnesty is just incorrect. It's inaccurate.
Right. And this is like the exercise of prosecutorial discretion. We are making a decision not to enforce deportation proceedings against this class of individuals. That's all it has been. And so you're right. I mean, it's not a path to citizenship, and it really kicked the can of anything to the Congress, which is the only place
Yes.
that this can be permanently resolved.
Yes.
So, Shannon, you had picked up on the fact that Elias, in the beginning of our conversation, pointed out how popular actually DACA has been. In 2018, two-thirds of Americans said people brought to the United States as children and now residing in the country illegally should be granted legal status. Why? What do we know about why the administration continues to push so hard on a program that's actually popular, even arguably with its own base?
I mean, look, this is pretty par for the course for the Trump administration from the get-go. Someone on the program earlier, I think it was Judge Gertner, mentioned the travel ban. I mean, the president set his tone very, very early in even his first presidential election that immigration and both legal and illegal immigration were going to be touchstones for him throughout his presidency. And so I think, quite honestly, this is just another sort of politicization of a program that was never meant to be a permanent fix. And it, you know, we know where these DACA recipients live. The government has data on them. The government has their addresses. These are people who are extremely vulnerable to deportation if they don't, you know, if the federal government doesn't hold up its end of the deal. And so in some ways it's, you know, I hate to use this term, but immigration lawyers themselves have said DACA recipients would be low hanging fruit in terms of being able to deport people right away. And so if this had come down a different way from the Supreme Court, it would have been, we could have seen immediate deportations because, again, the Department of Homeland Security knows where all of these people live and work.
So, Judge Gertner, I want to stay on the politics of this for a minute. The president tweeted earlier today and said, quote, "These horrible and politically charged decisions coming out of the Supreme Court are shotgun blasts into the face of people that are proud to call themselves Republicans or conservatives. We need more justices or we will lose our Second Amendment and everything else. Vote Trump 2020. End quote. Now, the court did hand down a ruling on Tuesday that American conservatives were not pleased with. The court actually refused to hear several Second Amendment-oriented cases on Tuesday. I know I ask you this almost every time you're on, but how unusual is it for a president to criticize the court with that kind of language in a moment like this?
It is. It's not just unusual. It is frightening. It is outrageous. I can't. There are. I don't have enough adjectives. For one thing, I mean, here with respect to last week's decision on the application of the employment discrimination laws to transgendered LGBTQ people, his appointee, which was Justice Gorsuch, wrote the majority opinion. Justice Roberts, appointed again by a Republican president, wrote this opinion. The president seems to believe that when he nominates and gets someone confirmed, that they advocate his agenda. This is so completely contrary to everything that an independent judiciary and an independent Supreme Court stands for. It's really outrageous and changes the nature of the institution if anyone ever listened to him. So it is completely outrageous. Not only that, it's clear that the only thing he cares about are the Second Amendment and, I would imagine, Roe v. Wade. And those are the touchstones of his appointees.
We're going to have to end there. That's Nancy Gertner, WBUR legal analyst, retired federal judge, and senior lecturer at Harvard Law School. Thanks for being with us today, Judge Gertner.
Thank you.
And Shannon Dooling, who reports on immigration for WBUR. Shannon, we're going to be watching your further reporting on this. Thanks so much for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thank you.